Okay, Parshas Shmini and Parshas Para. These are the two Torah portions we're reading this week. And they have much more in common than just happening to find themselves read together on the same week, because coincidentally Shmini comes out at this time of the year, and it's also the time to read Para, because going back to similar to Parsha Shkolim, it was in Nisan, the second of Nisan, that they burned the Para Aduma, the red heifer. And the reason they burned it was in order to gather its ashes, to mix with water and some other ingredients. And the reason they did that was to have this solution, which they can sprinkle on anyone who was Tamei Meis. And since everybody now Pesach was coming, and everybody had to find their way to the Beis HaMikdash and eat Korban Pesach, and therefore they had to be Tahar, pure. So therefore everybody needed to be sprinkled by the waters of the Para Aduma, the red cow, and therefore we read this now before Pesach to remind us of an ancient mitzvah that unfortunately we do not do today. And what we hope to accomplish today is to make it clear that the loss of the mitzvah of Para Aduma is a very great loss for us. Although it seems like an incomprehensible ritual. And it's that one chok that Shlomo HaMelech said, I tried and it's beyond me. And nobody was ever able to understand the reasoning behind it. Nevertheless, the loss of Para Aduma, we will see, is something that we miss and that affects us. But there is more between Parsha Shmini, which is this week's Parsha, and about the dedication of the Mishkan, and Parsha's Para, which happens to fall out at this time of the year because Pesach is coming. There is a very close link between Shmini and Para, and our job today is to figure out what that is. So in order to begin, what we are going to start with is our Parsha Shmini, and specifically focus on the paradox of the experience of Yom HaShmini. The tragedy that struck at the greatest moment, the moment of the greatest joy for Klal Yisrael. So, the parsha is about the dedication of the Mishkan. And the Mishkan was erected on the first of Nisan. There's a bit of a disagreement, but on the eighth day of the Chanukas HaMishkan, the dedication of the Mishkan, Yom HaShmini, there was at one moment great joy and huge tragedy. Now the joy was a result of the enormous satisfaction that the Jewish people had on the eighth day of Chanukas HaMishkan, when they saw that because of all their hard work, which they had done to put this Mishkan up, and they had done it out of pure love, lishma, as we've spoken about, the great level of doing, working lishma. And they had done it as a way of being mechaper, atoning for the egel. And they had done it as a way of bringing the Shechina back into their midst. And they had followed Moshe's instructions to the T, and every iota of every thread and every fabric, every ounce of gold and silver and every other material they used had been dedicated and worked with strictly l'shem shamayim. And everything was lishma, and here stood in front of them the Mishkan, which they had built, and what they were waiting for on this eighth day was to see if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would accept this Mishkan, if it would be a place that would be hospitable to the Shekhinah, if the Shekhinah would find a home here. And unlike by Sinai, where they stood at the bottom of the hill, worthy or not worthy, understanding or not understanding of what they were about to experience, the heavens broke open and the Shekhinah was revealed, and they were just, in a sense, spectators, overwhelmed entirely by the moment, because it was what they experienced was way beyond their preparation and their level. Here was a different story. They had worked, they had prepared, and they were able to receive any Giloy Shekhinah, revelation that would come as a result of their work. And so they stand there waiting, and the fire from heaven comes down and begins to consume the offering on the Mizbeach, and the Shekhinah is seen above the is seen above the Aron in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And when Klal Yisrael see this, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has descended, so to speak, the Shechina has descended into the place they built, there's the most joyous moment. They exult and rejoice and fall on their faces, and there's a revelation of Hashem Shechina. And this moment was the greatest moment ever so far for the Jewish people. And in the midst of all of this, in the midst of this revelation of Hashem, which was so intoxicating to the people, they had prepared for it. Their neshamas were primed to receive the Shechina. They were on a very high madrega here. And in the midst of all of this, Perek Yud, Pasuk Aleph, page 592, two of Aaron's sons, Nadav and Avihu, took their fire pans and put fire in them, placed incense upon it, and brought it lifnei Hashem into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Eish Zara. This was a fire that was not commanded, not part of the ritual of the day, and was not incumbent upon them to bring. This was an independent act, a voluntary act. This is something they took upon themselves to do. And there was a very severe repercussion, v'teitze esh milifnei Hashem, and a fire went out from before Hashem, v'tochalosam, and consumed them, v'yamusu, and they died, lifnei Hashem, and the two lifnei Hashems make it clear to us and to all the commentary that they were the holiest of the holy, the greatest of the great. They miscalculated, they did something wrong, which we will analyze now, but it came only from a yearning to be closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then Vayomer Moshe al Aaron, and we will get to that pasuk in a moment. First, trying to understand what happened here. There are a number of explanations. There is some implied guilt, but the guilt is almost a compliment. The Sifra, which is the Medrash, explains that if you flip back to Shemos, Perek 19, that's Yutes, page. Here, page 404, you will see that at the time of the giving of the Torah, there was a warning issued over and over again to Klal Yisrael to make sure not to overstep their bounds when the Shechina would reveal itself on the mountain, because it would be fatal. And this warning is expressed here in Pasuk 21, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Raid Ha'ed Ba'am, go and warn them, do not break forth through to Hashem, because they will not survive. And look at the next one, Vahakohanim, and they were warned, Gam HaKohanim, that's Nadav and Avihu and Aaron's children, Gam HaKohanim, who are closer, who have more access to the Shechina, who serve. They should be prepared, and they should wash themselves, lest Hashem burst forth against them. In other words, everybody hold yourselves back. Now here, we know that at the time of the revelation of Hashem Shechina at Har Sinai, there were those that couldn't hold themselves back, and the Torah tells us, Chazal tell us, that those among those were Nadav and Avihu, already back by Har Sinai, who, if you look in Perek 24, Pasuk 10, which is on page 440, Vayal Moshe v'Aaron v'Nadav v'Avihu v'Shivim Mizikne Yisrael. Aaron and Moshe and these two went up, and this Shivim Zikanim, Vayiru es Elokei Yisrael, and they looked, they saw the God of Israel. And this pasuk defies comprehension. We don't know what this really means. V'tachas raglav, and beneath his feet there was some type of sapphire brick, and it was like the essence of heaven and impurity. And look what the next pasuk says: and against the great men of the children of Israel, ve'el atzilei b'nei Israel lo shalach yado, he did not stretch out his hand. That's Hashem. He didn't smite them, although they were gazing and they saw way beyond what they should have seen. And they gazed at Hashem and they ate and they drank. Now, Nadav and Avihu were guilty once before for penetrating, for wanting to see more, for going beyond their limits. And you can't blame necessarily a person whose neshama is so on fire, so elevated, so there's so much yearning and an overwhelming passion to attach to the Shechina, to not be able to hold themselves back. It's a great love that's almost beyond their control. We think only the Yetzer Hara overpowers a person and drives them and pushes them into acts that could be classified as momentary insanity because the passion is overwhelming. It's also true for the Yetzer HaTov. It's also true for in a person's heart there is a desire to connect to our Shoresh, our source. And when the Shechina is apparent, it becomes impossible for people whose neshamas are primed, who are active, to hold themselves back. So here, it comes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't punish them on that day. The Sifra explains that here, at the time of Hakamas HaMishkan and Yom HaShmini, they did it again. They did it, Nadav and Avihu, also another moment, as great as Sinai, perhaps greater, and they looked for an excuse to come into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So they took Ketores, which was not part of the offerings of that day. And although they were Aaron's children, and they were helping, and they were participating in all the activities of that day, and they were closer than anyone to the experience of that day, they looked for some reason to bring themselves into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And you know, when a person has a Yetzer Hara, they can find 1,000 reasons and excuses to have to do something that they really want to do. So it operates the same way the Yetzer HaTov, from the Neshama, and they looked for some type of excuse to bring themselves into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and they found one without consulting with Moshe and Aaron, which is their guilt here also, and found themselves bringing Ketores into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and this was the second time, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away their lives, and some say their bodies were intact, but their neshamot were consumed, and some say exactly the opposite. It seems that their neshamot were alive and well because they are considered great tzaddikim, and later, as we will see, Moshe says they are the closest to God, and through his closest and most perfect will he be elevated. So when we talk about a neshama being destroyed, we're talking about only the worst of the worst. There's only about 4 people who have no chelik in Olam Haba, which means their neshama doesn't live. Maybe some more beyond that time that it was written. I'm sure Hitler and those are included, but at that, Chazal tell us. But so it seems that their neshamos were alive and brought close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they couldn't continue living in this world under those conditions. Now, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah say that they emphasize that only this sin could have brought this type of death upon them. A sin of wanting, as Chazal say, the Medrash says, lahosif ahava al ahava, to increase their love more and more, to see more, to be closer to the Shechina. Now, when this happens, Moshe comes over to Aaron and he says to him, "Vayomer Moshe Aaron, Hu Asher Diber Hashem." That's what Hashem said. Bikrovai Ekadesh. Now, there's a famous piece here. Chazal tell us, Moshe said to Aaron, "I knew that this great moment of Giloy Shechina, of revelation, of closeness to Hashem, I knew it would come with the deaths of some tzaddikim. It had to be." He understood there was no way for the Shechina to be this close and for it not to consume the greatest of the people at the moment. He said, "I just thought it would be you or me, and I didn't realize it was Nadav and Avihu who were greater than us, that they had so much passion for to be close to the Shechina that they couldn't hold themselves back anymore, where we were still controlled." Remember Moshe, by the way, and this is the implied flaw with Nadav and Avihu. The only thing that held Moshe back from bursting forth, the reason he covered his eyes by the snare, the reason he never came into the Ohel Moed unless he was called when the Anan was over the tent, is because of his great humility. His great humility that he could never take matter into his own hands. He couldn't assume that he was welcome or that he would have free access or that he could do what he wanted. It was his essence, the core of Moshe's being was humility, and that's what held him back. And Nadav and Avihu Chazal tell us weren't as there was something missing in their humility. They felt that they were close enough, they were high enough, they were kadosh enough, they were that they could go one step further without danger. So Moshe said, "We always knew this would happen. It had to happen. These two events work together: the great joy of the Shechina among us, and then the loss of our greatest two." He just didn't know who it would be, and it was Nadav and Avihu. Now, just to show you, and this is a technical little point, but it goes to show how you read Rashi, how you learn. This is from my grandfather. Look at Rashi here. It teaches us something incredible about Aaron and how you learn Chumash. Look at Rashi on Pasuk Gimel. Now, Rashi normally comments on the Pasuk, okay? First words in the Pasuk get commented on first. Obviously, he goes in order. All right, look at the Rashi. First, look at the Pasuk. Vayomer Moshe al Aaron. Moshe said to Aaron, Hu asher diber Hashem. Isn't this what Hashem had said? Because earlier, by the way, when they were putting up the Mishkan, Hashem had said, through those that honor me, I will be honored. So Moshe understood. So here Moshe says, isn't this what Hashem has said? Lemor, the krovai ekadesh, through the ones that are closest to me, I will be elevated. V'alpne kol ha'am ekabed, and in the face before all of the people, I will be honored. Vayidom Aaron, and Aaron was silent. Famous words. Look in the Rashi. First he comments on hu asher diber, etc. And this Rashi is the one we just quoted, the where Moshe says to him, Achai, my brother, Achi, Yodea Ha'isi, I knew that this house would be sanctified with somebody who was close to Hashem. I thought it was me or you. Now we see that they are greater than us, Gedolim Mimeni, Umimcha, greater than me and greater from you. And he brings down the sources. What are the next words Rashi comments on? Vayidom Aaron, which in the Pasuk are which words? The last words. Isn't that interesting? And what does he say? Kibel schar al shtika. So he received reward that he had been quiet. And maschar kibel. And what schar did he receive? That Hashem spoke to him directly about the laws of the drinking of the wine. Now what does Rashi do? He goes back and he explains the word bikrovai, those that are close to me, those that I've chosen specially, my choice ones. And then he goes and explains, "Va'alpnei kol ha'am ekabed," and I will be honored before all of the people. And Rashi says there, "Kishakadosh Baruch Hu oseh din b'tzadikim." When God carries out midas hadin with tzadikim, he's feared, he's elevated. It increases our awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a sense. Okay? So our simple question is, besides the philosophical question, how's that? That when Hashem carries out midas hadin against the tzaddikim, which is what we call tzaddik viralo, extreme midas adin, intolerance for the slightest deviation among tzaddikim, where everyone else can just do whatever they want with impunity, that elevates Hashem, besides for that issue, which we will talk about, why does Rashi mix around the order? Now, the word vayidom is in the past tense. He was already quiet. So, it's interesting. When was Aaron silent? Ramban says he was crying and wailing, and when Hashem, Moshe talked to him, he instantly stopped. So the grandfather points out here, look at the pasuk. You see that little line between hu asher diber Hashem, psik, lemor bekrovei akadesh? That line is the key to Rashi's mixing around the order of how he's translating the psukim. This is what happened. Aaron was crying. Moshe came and said, Hu asher diber Hashem. This is Hashem is speaking. As soon as Aaron heard that Hashem is speaking, instantly he stopped crying, that Hashem is addressing him. Before he even heard what Hashem will say to him, he immediately stopped his crying and was silent. Vayidom Aaron. Instantly. Then Moshe explained to him, Bikrovei Akadesh, I will be sanctified through those who are closest to me. And at that point, Aaron received that message. But Rashi's telling us, by putting Vayidom Aaron before the message of Bekrovei HaKadosh, that he was already silent when Moshe first came to him and said, Hashem is talking to you. Hu asher diber Hashem. So that little psik explains Rashi's twisting of the pasuk. which means to say, as soon as Aaron heard that it was Devar Hashem, now, that phrase, Devar Hashem, we use that phrase to mean, when we talk about the Devar Hashem, we mean Hashem's Gezerah that we don't understand. For example, we say this every day in davening, before Shemona Esrei, in Emes V'Yatziv. What do we say? Ashrei Ish Sheyishma L'mitzvosecha. Fortunate, forward moving, according to Hirsch, is the man that listens to your mitzvos, V'soraschah, and your Torahs, your hora'ah, your understanding, U'devarcha, and your word, your dibor, your devar, Yasim al-libo, he puts on his heart. The devarcha already is explained by previously, way earlier, going back to the Ramban, that devarcha, dibor, is the gezeira of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that we don't understand. It's a gezeira. Gezeira always implies a harsh decree. That there's a gezeira and it has to just be accepted, and even if it's not in your heart, it has to be on your heart, sitting there pressuring, putting weight on your heart, and one day maybe the famous Kutzker Rebbe's Vart, when the heart opens up, everything that's on your heart will fall in, right? And be part of how you think and become bilvavecha in your heart and not necessarily anymore alavavcha on your heart. But in any case, as soon as Moshe says to Aaron, Hu asher diber Hashem, this is a devar Hashem, it's a gezeira vayidom. And then Moshe begins to explain the concept of bekrovai ekadesh, which is a huge philosophical issue. And we will spend the time now trying to delve into that concept because it is very relevant to Parshas Parah. Parshas Parah, which happens to be read this Shabbos because they burned the Parah because Pesach was coming, because everybody had to be Tameh, Tahar, is associated. It's the answer, in a sense, and the explanation to these two words, Bikrovai Ekadesh. Through my closest ones will I become sanctified. And it also helps us understand the concept of the Devar Hashem and the silence of Aaron here. Now, these ideas that we're about to do come from the Be'er Yosef, which is Rav Yosef Salant, from the Salant family, like the Rav of Yerushalayim of Shmuel Salant. I think it's either some grandson or maybe a great nephew. It's fairly recent, about 100 years ago, but really worth understanding. Let's turn to Parshas Parah. What page did we say it's on?
838.
Okay. Parshas Parah starts at Vidabra Hashem el Moshe v'al Aaron Lemar, Zos Chukas HaTorah. This is the chuk, the greatest chuk of the Torah, the essence of chukim in the Torah. Asher tziva Hashem lemar, daver el b'nei Yisrael, v'yikchu eilecha para aduma, take for yourself, he's talking to Aaron, v'yikchu eilecha, take for yourself, a para aduma, tamima, pure, that has no blemish, and that never bore an oil, and give it to your son Elazar. It's important to know that Aaron was not involved with the preparation of the para aduma, although he had to take it for himself. It was Elazar who was in charge of the first one, who was in charge of working with it and going through the entire process of preparing it. Later, there's a machlokus, did it go to only Kohen Hedyot or did it go to Kohen Gadol? But here, it definitely was not Aaron's job, and that becomes significant. It was Elazar's job, was one of the two remaining sons of Aaron. Now, the Parah Adum, as we know, is a chok. It's the quintessential chok. And the question is, the question is, why is that reserved for us as the chok? Let's analyze this. Actually, we learn that there was someone who did know the reason for Parah Aduma, and it was Moshe Rabbeinu. He was told the answer to Parah Aduma. And actually, we are taught that in the future, after all is said and done, we will all be once again told the answers, the reasons, the meaning of Parah Aduma will be revealed to everybody. It does have a meaning, and we'll get to know it. But not now. And in between Moshe and the future, everybody dealt with this issue of the strange paradox of Parah Aduma, and nobody could figure it out, not even Shlomo HaMelech. However, interestingly enough, Rashi brings down that there is a simple explanation for Parah Aduma. The Medrash says, you know what? Let the mother come and clean up the mess her child made in the palace. So you did the Cheder Egel, fix it up with the Para. So that seems like an explanation. If you delve into many of the laws of Parah Aduma, they parallel in an interesting way a lot of what went on with the Cheder Egel. So we do have a reason. So when Chazal say we have no explanation for Parah Aduma, they are speaking about one aspect of Parah Aduma which defies comprehension. And that is the strange paradox that if a person is Tamei Meis, they have come in contact with a dead body. They have been in a house where there was a dead body. Their furniture is all Tamei. Their clothing is all Tamei. They were in touch with someone who was in touch with a dead body. Tumas Meis, which the people in the time of the Beis HaMikdash lived with on a regular basis. You couldn't avoid Tumas Meis. They didn't have hospitals. People died at home all the time. There was no way to avoid Tumas Meis. And it was a whole process. You had to go and you had to get sprinkled. It was a constant involvement. There was, everybody was Tamei Meis, and then as soon as anyone wanted to go to the Beis HaMikdash, had any carbon to bring, they certainly had to eliminate their Tumas Meis. So this type of Tumah is Chamor, the most severe of all Tumas. And the Parah Aduma had the unique ability to completely erase it. But once a person was sprinkled by the Parah Aduma, the Tumah, which is a spiritual, not physical uncleanliness, was gone. Disappeared. So it had the power to be mitaher. It had the strongest power. There was no power greater than it in the world, greater than mikvah, to be mitaher. At the same time, anybody who touched or got involved with the Parah Aduma, who carried the water, who sprinkled it, who prepared it, anybody who had any contact with this pure, purifying water, became tamei instantly, and had to himself be purified. His clothing were tamei. He couldn't touch anything. He couldn't be near anybody. He was tamei, totally tamei. And we say about the phrase we use, it's mitaher tameim. It purifies those that are tamei. And mitamei tahorim, and it makes those that are tahor tamei. It makes the pure ones impure. It's a reversal of itself. It does two opposite things at the very same time. It purifies and it taints. It impurifies. The very same material has two opposite, exact opposite reactions, results. That's incomprehensible. It's counterintuitive. Either it's mitaher or it's mitame. And who gets tame? The one who's giving of himself, sacrificing to be mitaher someone else, who's innocent, who's only good, who's trying to bring tahara, purity to everyone, and now they're tame. And there's always got to be someone tame who's going to therefore always going to miss out on Korban Pesach and those type of things because they were mitaher the other people. So this is the paradox of Parah Aduma that nobody understands. How could this power to be mitaher have power in it to be mitame at the same time? Now, another thing. We are told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us chukim and mitzvahs and mishpatim so that we would be wise, intelligent, noble intellectually in the eyes of the Goyim. They will see our wisdom by the mitzvahs we keep, and they'll say, there's no nation on the, there's no nation as chacham v'navon la'am ka'amazeh. And here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a chok that we have no choice but to say, we just do it because Hashem said so. It doesn't make us look more intelligent. It doesn't make us look understanding. We live with it as something that we have no idea why we do it, and we don't know how it works, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu told it to us, so we work with it, and that's all it is. And Yosef Salant brings down one more technical point. He says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers to this chok of Parah Aduma, he uses a double lashon, which becomes very significant. Chokah chakakti, I engraved a chok, gezeira gazarti, and we know what a gezeira is. I made a gezeira. I established a decree. I decreed a decree. Why is this referred to in double lashon? And this is specific to Aaron. He takes the Parah Aduma, which is Metaher Tameim and Metame Tahorim. It's for him. It relates specifically to him, but he gives it to Elazar. So on the first day of Nisan, the Mishkan was erected. During the Chanukah and Mishkan, Nadav and Avihu died because they were so great. The second day of Nisan, the Parah Aduma was burned. And there was a possibility for Klal Yisrael to remove the Tumas Meis and live with the paradox. The connection between the two is very obvious once you read this. Isn't there something strikingly similar between these two rules? Metaher Tameim, Metame Tahorim, and Tzadik Viralo, Rasha Vitovlo? Don't they seem to work in the same type of way? A person who is a tzaddik should deserve to be treated like a tzaddik, but they are treated as a rasha, in a sense. There's a gezeira on them that's stronger, more severe than a gezeira than any average mediocre person has applied to them. They're a tzaddik, but they seem to be treated like a rasha, and a rasha seems to be treated like a tzaddik, and someone who's tahar should be tameh. Where someone tame becomes tahar, he points out that philosophically speaking, the Para Aduma was a chok that on a regular basis made us focus, made us confront the paradox we live with at all times. Tzadik Varalo, Rasha Vatovlo. Metaher Tameim, Metame Tahorim. And he says that by virtue of the fact that we constantly were involved with the Para Aduma of water, it became for the Jewish people second nature to live with this type of paradoxical awareness in their heads, that that's just how some things are, without knowing why it must be. That's the chok, why it has to be like that. It just is the way it is. And to be able to work with that, accept it as part of their life, and go on without an answer. That's the part of Para Aduma that no one understands. That's the question of Tzadik Varalo that nobody understands, how it has to be like this. Aaron was not told to do the work to prepare the Para Aduma. He had to take it, but give it to Elazar. And he points out here that by the fact that Aaron was quiet, as soon as Moshe said to him, this is the Devar Hashem, right? Hu asher diber Hashem, as soon as he knew there was a gezeira and he was mekabel, he did not need for himself the lesson of the Para Aduma. That's metaher tameim, metame tahorim. He understood that. He accepted it. He was silent. He didn't reject it. He didn't question it. And therefore he wasn't plagued with this big question of how are the pure impure and the impure are all of a sudden pure. But his son Elazar and everyone after that was certainly commanded and responsible for integrating this concept. But Aaron was already beyond it. Aaron had achieved it without the Para Aduma. By that little psik. We know that. So he goes on to say that don't underestimate the power of habit, of working with a concept like Para Aduma, using it in your day-to-day life. It changes a person. It works on their head. It works on their neshama. It works on their heart. It puts things, it settles things all on levavcha, on your heart, so that you're comfortable, in a sense, to be a good Jew, despite the fact that you have this question. Now, this question is as old as existence itself. Moshe Rabbeinu asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the answer to this question, as you know, by the second Luchos. He says, "Horeini na derachecha, show me your ways," which means the Gemara tells us, "Ribono shel olam," the Gemara in Brachos, "Mipnei ma yesh tzadik v'tovlo, v'yesh tzadik v'ralo, yesh rasha v'tovlo, v'yesh rasha v'ralo." Lefi divrei Rabbi Meir says that Hashem did not give him an answer. He said, "V'chanosi es asher achon." Remember in the 13 Midos, which came at that time, Moshe asked Hashem for the answer to this question when he was getting the second Luchos, and his answer was the 13 Midas HaRachamim. And in there it says, "I will have compassion on those I will have compassion on." And he says, even if a person's not worthy, maybe I'll have I'll give them Matnas Chinam, a free gift. And he says to him, "V'richamti es asher arachim," and I'm going to have Rachmanis on who I have Rachmanis on. "Afilu she'enu kahagun," even if he's not roy, if he's not hagun, not worthy. And I can't explain to you why. Now, we've spoken about this before. Moshe did not get an answer to Tzadik Varalo V'Rasha V'Tovlo, even though we're told that Moshe did have a sense of Para Aduma more than anyone else, and in the future we will have it too, which now makes sense, because the whole question of how Hashem conducts the world is hidden from us now, but we will not always be in confusion. We will know, but as we function here, it's removed from us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't answer him. However, he did give him an image. He answered him with the 13 Midas HaRachman that everything is chesed. There's some MS too, truth, but mostly chesed. and he gave him an image to keep in mind. And Rashi tells us there, he showed him like a shaliach tzibur, someone praying before the congregation. He saw his back, and he showed him, as you know, the kesher tefillin, the knot behind the tefillin. Now my grandfather explains this. When you look at somebody wearing tefillin, you see a right strap and a left strap on their heads, and you see a right strap and a left strap hanging down over their chest. And you could see it, touch it, and feel it, and you could swear on a chumash that that's a right strap and that's a left strap. Because that's what you see, and that's the only possibility. However, it's one little technical problem. If the person turns around, you all of a sudden are shocked to notice that what the right strap is up here on the head is actually hanging down on the left side. And the left strap is hanging on the right side because there's a knot and the straps cross. Which means to say, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching Moshe by showing him the knot of the tefillin, is that the Olam HaElyon, the upper spheres, my world, which is the above the shoulder, so to speak, symbolically in a person, where the neshama resides, in the head, in the mind, in my spheres, there's right and left. But here in the body, which is shoulders and below, your spheres, the physical, what you see could look like left and right, and you have no way to know from your perspective, that what you see is not what the reality is in my spheres. It's exactly the opposite. So he didn't explain how he conducts the world, but he showed him that it's not the way you see it, to a point that Moshe was able to be makabel that it's not the way you see it. Interestingly enough, notice, medically speaking, when a person, God forbid, has a stroke on the right hemisphere of the brain, they're paralyzed on the left and vice versa. And that's because the nerves travel up the spinal column and directly beneath the kesher tefillin at the base of the brain, there is an anatomical area right here and that is called the decussation of the pyramids. And that is where the nerves cross and go to the opposite hemispheres. So just goes to show, the men wear kesher tefillin. They don't not necessarily know. They didn't know for many thousands of years that that's where the nerves crossed. But just having a mitzvah that is, you know, massaging, so to speak, into our neshamas a concept that it's not what we see and it's not what we know. The mitzvah of kesher tefillin, which is halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, it just is. No real rational explanations to it to have a knot like that over there. It massages into a person's neshama, just like para aduma, an awareness of this concept that it gives us the ability to work with it. And Moshe Rabbeinu is not the first person or the last person to have this question. Iyov asked this question. Habakkuk asked this question. David HaMelech asked this question. Everybody asked this question. But the answers are not revealed to us. However, Rambam explains that the more you do something, the more it becomes habit, and the more it becomes natural, and you can take it as part of your life, which is interesting. There's, you know, machlokas, whether you give $1,000 to one poor person or $10 to 100. And there's a strong opinion that you give $10 to 100 people because it gets you used to giving and it makes a person more generous. It changes the person. So here, the concept of having paraduma, which we don't have, was very helpful in those days and for the course of Jewish history in helping the Jews accept the gezerah, the different gezerahs that came upon them. And that's why he says, chuka chakakti, gezerah gezarti. There's two, paraduma and tzadik v'ralo. Two chukim that are engraved, that are absolute, that must be. Paraduma is a chok, but there's an implied chok here too. Tzadik v'ralo. And gezerah gezarti, a gezerah of paraduma, but the gezerahs that B'nai Yisrael lived through. That's also part of it. Now, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to heaven to get the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he saw HaKadosh, this is a famous medrash. He sees HaKadosh Baruch Hu drawing all the little crowns on all the letters, decorating all the letters, and he says, What are you doing? So he says, in the future, there's going to be somebody, Akiva, and he's going to learn out so many laws from all these little decorations, these little crowns on top of all the letters. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, I want to see him. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, go. He showed him, brought him into the future. So here's Rabbi Akiva, and Moshe comes into the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Akiva, and remember what we talked about last week? Torah had exploded in 2,000 years, 2,000 years from Moshe to Rabbi Akiva, and Moshe couldn't understand what was going on in the Beis Medrash. They were talking about halachas he'd never heard about, probably applying things to realities that didn't exist in his day, learning out hints and tricks and delving in and arguing about things that that were unfamiliar to him. And he had to sit in the eighth row in the back because he couldn't participate in the conversation. And he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well, if you have him, what do you need me for? So he was very upset. He thought that Torah had moved on without him. There was so much more Torah in the world, and he himself wasn't quite sure what it was they were talking about. And then Rabbi Akiva said something. And a student said, but how do you know? How do you know? What's the proof? How can you prove it, that this is a mitzvah? And Rabbi Akiva said, halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. That's it. It comes from Sinai. It's a chok. That's it. No more questions. It stems from Moshe, and that's why we accept it. I can't prove it. By the way, it doesn't tell you what halacha they were talking about. Perhaps it was Paraduma, perhaps it was Kesher Tefillin, perhaps something like this. When Moshe heard that Rabbi Akiva ended the conversation with halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, it's from Moshe, that's it, he felt better. He felt that with all the back and forth,
he remembered me.
With all the back and forth, in the end there were certain things that were chukim, and that's the way they were. So then he says, so let me see Rabbi Akiva's end, let me see the schar. Can I see the schar for Rabbi Akiva bringing Torah to the world to such a degree? So Hashem said, yeah, you could see the schar also. Now, you know how Rabbi Akiva perished. He was tortured in the most barbaric ways. They combed his skin with hot iron combs to peel his skin off, and then they chopped whatever. They completely mutilated him. And the malachim were screaming, Zu Torah v'zu schora, this is Torah and this is its reward. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, remember we read this on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, one more word and the whole world goes back to Tohu Vavohu, that's it. So Moshe saw the end of Rabbi Akiva. Now, what's behind this story? How did Moshe deal with seeing the end of Rabbi Akiva? The beginning of the story explains how Moshe dealt with the end of the story. When it became evident that even way into the future, the Jewish people live with the idea of halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, there's chukim that come from Sinai that Moshe taught us, and there's nothing to talk about. If that's true in intellectual spheres, so it's also true in the way Hashem conducts the world, halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, it came down, para aduma, that's it. And Moshe could accept the fact that as we don't know intellectually why there are certain laws, we also don't know in terms of Hashem's hanhaga, the way he conducts the world, how it is that it's like this. But let's not make any mistake about it. Just because we don't understand how Hashem conducts the world doesn't mean that there was no Har Sinai and that the Torah isn't true and that we're not the Am Nivchar. It doesn't mean any of those things. It just means we don't know how Hashem conducts the world. But in the future, we will know how Hashem conducts the world, which leads us into the concept of Emuna Pshuta. Emuna Pshuta, simple faith, is very important here. Emuna Pshuta is, first and foremost, what it isn't. It is not a lazy man's excuse to not learn, to not delve into the mitzvahs, to not understand the ways of Hashem, to not understand how Hashem works with this world, to not understand Jewish history. Emuna Pshuta is not an excuse for a lack of curiosity and intellectual effort. We would not have millions of Sfarim if the operative, you know, way of thinking was, you know, among our smartest, well, it's a moon of truth, it is what it is, so that's it. We wouldn't have anything. We'd have no philosophy books. We'd have no Machshava books. We'd have no books explaining anything. We would barely have, we'd have some Halacha books and that's it. So Emunah Pshuta, my grandfather explains, is certainly not step one, and it's not an excuse for not learning. Emunah Pshuta is the final stage after a person has lived their life totally immersed in learning, in understanding, in caring. You don't get an explanation that the Psik Resha, that little line, explains why Rashi changes the order of the Pasuk if you're not thinking philosophically about what's going on. the effort that people exert to delve into every little word and dot in Chumash, the human effort, okay? That is the process. And at the end of all of that working and thinking and trying, then sometimes we have nothing to rely on at the end besides Emunah Pshuta. For example, a person has a puzzle with 5,000 pieces, and they have 4,900 pieces in place, and they basically get the beautiful picture that the, you know, the landscape, it's very nice, you know, they can appreciate it. But there's 100 pieces missing here and there, okay? We are the Jewish people. We have a Torah, we have a whole Tanakh, we have endless Svarim, we have a life, we have a history. That's 4,900 pieces. We are the chosen people, we've survived till now, we know all this. We have 100 missing pieces. We have a lot of questions that we don't have answers to. But despite those missing pieces, we still see the big picture. And it still makes a lot of sense. It's still very convincing. It's still very beautiful and very impressive, very noble. So what do we do with those 100 pieces when somebody says, well, where's that piece? The picture's not complete. What are you going to do with that piece? Questions that we don't have answers to. So then we say, because we have 99% of the picture intact, so for the 1% of the picture that's not intact, we have Emunah Pshuta, that one day we'll find the answers to those questions too. Emunah Pshuta, simple faith, is never, by the way, the Christian leap of faith to believe there's a God. That's ridiculous. Hashem didn't go through the huge effort of Har Sinai and make 3 million people into Nevi'im, and everybody heard Moshe spoken to by Hashem, and all of that Gilui Shechina. He didn't do all that so that we should have blind faith that there is a God. We have knowledge that there's a God. So what is Emunah Pshuta, simple faith? Emunah Pshuta is that there are unanswered questions. There are promises Hashem made that haven't come true yet. For example, Mashiach. We have Emunah Pshuta, Mashiach will come. That everyone will do tshuva, and we won't be lost in the process. We have Emunah Pshuta in that. Rav Yashaber says, you know, we say every day, Ani Mamin Be'Emunah Shlema Be'Vias HaMashiach. But we also learn that Mashiach's coming is predicated on our tshuva. So how do we believe Mashiach's going to come? So he answers, because we have Emunah that everyone's going to do tshuva. That's really what it means. It will come a point. People will do tshuva. The reality will be so clear, people will back down, drop their defenses, and everyone will do tshuva. We have Emunah in Tchiyas HaMesim, a promise that hasn't come true yet. Yeah, we have Emunah. That's where we have Emunah. We don't have Emunah that there's a God. We don't. Maybe the Christians and the Muslims need it because there's one person who claims he did miracles and nobody ever saw it, so maybe they need blind faith, because how are a billion people supposed to believe one person's story? Yeah, that's a good opportunity for blind faith, but not us. So Emunah Pshuta is that the questions that we don't have answers to, the promises Hashem made that haven't come true yet, they too will come true. And we too will understand. That's our Emunah Pshuta. That there'll be an answer to this question of Parah Aduma. And I just want to end by reminding you of something we said a few weeks ago, which is very appropriate for Pesach. Look how Parshas Chukas is introduced. Zos Chukas HaTorah. Remember the word Zos? Zos is a huge word. The Tam of the four children, the simple one, says Ma Zos. What's this? What's he asking? What's Zos Chukas HaTorah? The parsha, the para, is a chok. Zos Chukas. This is the chok. Remember my grandfather's bar? Zos has a specific meaning. We say in Tehillim, Ish Bar Lo Yeda. A uneducated person will not know. Uksil and a fool. Lo Yavin Et Zos. They will not understand Zos. What's Zos? What are the next words? Befroach Reshaim Kamo Esev. That the wicked flourish. The Yatzitu called Poale Evan, and they just sprout forth all the evildoers, right? They don't understand that. Lihishamdam Adiyad, to ultimately be destroyed. If this is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats his close ones, Bikrovai, just imagine the ones who are the evil ones, the ones who hate everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to establish in this world. We can't even imagine. So that's Zos. Zos is this concept of tzaddik v'ralo, k'sil lo yavin et zos, befroach l'shayim k'mo esev. This concept is zos. You know what the Tam asks? Ma zos. What was this whole 200 years of slavery and persecution and for salvation in the end? What is it? And zos chukas haTorah, that's the para. That is the chok of para aduma. Mataher Tameim, Matame Tahorim. But that's now. That's for us. In the future, when there is no more Tumah to take away, then, and this is also our, then this, by the way, the Tumah of this question is intellectually the most severe form of Tumah. This type of Tumah is what separates a person from serving the Kadosh Baruch Hu with all their heart and all their soul. It's an intellectual Tumah. And you know how people answer this type of Tumah? Tzadik Varalu Rasha V'Tovlo? God is not interested. He's not involved. He doesn't interfere in the world anymore. He's not watching. He's powerless. He doesn't care. That's how people deal with the Tumah, the impurity of these type of thoughts. God's not interested. There is no God. God was turned his head away. He wasn't watching. He doesn't have the power to interfere. He doesn't care about the Jews. That's why. So all of those questions lead people far away. So although Parshas Parah is not like Parshas Zohar, that everybody must attend, many hold that women should also attend Parshas Parah. And we don't have the Parah to do today, but we have the reading of the Parah. And it behooves everybody to participate in the reading of Parshas Parah and hope that just awareness of this mitzvah and learning about this mitzvah will help us slowly, slowly in a way that we can't really tangibly feel, but help us emotionally, psychologically, in Ruchnias, be able to go to contend with this concept and not have it destroy us and turn us off and undermine everything. And the greatest proof of the power of the Jewish people to live with Tzadik Varalo and Rasha V'Tovlo, going back a few weeks ago, everybody knows what happened there, Rosh Chodesh Adar in the yeshiva in Merkaz Arav, right? But you know what happened the next morning in yeshiva in Merkaz Arav? The Beis Medrash was full force, and everybody was learning, and they didn't have a 50% dropout rate from the yeshiva the next day. The Jewish people have been able to survive with this concept and to move forward and continue on our mission. And if they over there can do it in Eretz Yisrael, which is supposed to be a protected place and a more in terms of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shmira, but this is, in our day, we had an example of the Krovai HaKadosh through the ones close, the innocent children who aren't even Chayav and Azam Lamakom, except for one who was over 20, who you read about him, the Ethiopian. This is Bikrovai Ekadesh. There's nothing else to say. These are the closest ones, the most perfect ones. The ones who were on fire, love. They came back from the Kosel and were eating Sudas Rosh Chodesh. And all they were going to do was celebrate Mishnechnas Adam Arvin Besimcha. What else should they have been doing? Where else should they have been? Everything was right. And then you read the stories about them. This is the same as Bikrovai Ekadesh. And our response is Aaron's Vayidom. And the Paraduma. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, interestingly, there is an effort. They are cultivating herds of red cows, desperately trying to breed one that will fit all the criteria for the halacha of Paraduma. They're working on it. We hope that Kadosh Baruch Hu will feel us worthy to help us restore this mitzvah. Okay, everyone, have a good Shabbos.